Blog Talk Radio.
Released in 2003 on their album More Than You Think You Are. And I'd like to welcome everyone listening to a team of voices broadcast of Off the Rack. I'm your host, Raconteur. In case you're wondering, a team of voices is the name of our group on the allpoetry.com website, where you'll find the links to the poems that you'll hear on this podcast, and also be able to meet some of the amazing poets who are gracious enough to share their words. Feel free to join us on allpoetry.com. It's free to join. I hope you're ready, because now it's time to rack our brains discussing the things that drive us crazy and touch on how they make us think and feel.
Maybe I shouldn't say us, but at least me. I came across that quote for tonight a while ago. I was probably junior high school, and the thought of it set my brain really in 20 different directions, like a lot of different things do. But before I get into all that nonsense and we start, I think we've got a couple of people on the line, and I hate to leave you guys on hold. So let's start and say hello to Pretty Bird. How you doing tonight?
Hello, hello. No complaints. I am good. Glad to be here.
Yeah, he's in a blog post hating on you, huh?
A little bit.
Oh, and I think we got a nice lag going, too. Lovely. Oh. Well, why don't we bring everybody on the line?
We have Guy. Hello.
Hey, Sky.
Hello.
Hey, hey.
I'm being teased with a banana cream cheesecake. Delicious.
I haven't met a cheesecake I didn't like.
And homemade at that.
And I think we got the Mad Hatter on the line as well.
Yeah, that was right.
Hello.
Hello.
And our resident
that sounds great. That was Matchbox. That was Matchbox. So it
Matchbox
sounded like
20,
Matchbox.
Yeah, sort of sounded like Green Day too.
I don't hear that, but
no, maybe not.
I like the song idea being I'm not crazy. I'm just a little unwell. So that resonated with me. That's what that follows me around. My brain's a little twisted. I took my little quote and I'm bringing Sweet Pea on the air. I'm not going to stop in the middle of doing that. Hey, Sweet.
Hi. How's everybody? Well, we were fine, so you pleased us with homemade banana stuff.
I know.
Oh, yeah. I made a banana cake with cream cheese frosting in the middle and all over it. Yep.
Banana has a certain appeal.
Just a little bit.
That's when I thought you couldn't get any sweeter.
Yeah, that quote that I put on the topic, like I said, it took me a little crazy when I really actually think about, you know, the slippery and thought is viscous. It's twisted into the whole thing about, you know, why some people argue because, you know, I know what I said, but you didn't understand what I meant kind of a thought, you know. And you know, I don't know if it's unique to English or other languages have homonyms, but, you know, it just reminds me of that as well because a simple statement like, you know, I'm afraid of nothing can be taken two different ways if you don't realize that nothing can have a different meaning, you know. It could mean that, you know, I have no fear, or it could mean that, you know, I'm afraid of the emptiness. So, you know, a simple thought like that, that could be twisted so easily, it's scary. And you know, I don't know. All the arguments that ensue over silly things like that, you know. Well, I told you. Well, I didn't take it that way. So you didn't tell me. It gets worse, you know, in the digital age, screenshots and everything else, you know. People want to throw it in your face. And that's not what you said, but that's what I meant. That's what I was trying to say. So how do you argue something like that? So that's why that quote resonated with me. And then, you know, as writers, you know, thoughts take us in different directions. So, you know, I wanted to give everyone a chance to get up on a soapbox and talk about their favorite quotes. Maybe share something they were.
Is it just me, or do y'all hear him cutting out a little bit?
Yeah, he cut out pretty bad.
Of course I am. Log Talk hates me too. You didn't know that?
No, I thought I was the only one. I thought I was a leper.
No. So. Pretty Bird, do you have a favorite quote?
I have two. My favorite, and I'm not sure who said it because I don't remember crap lately, but it goes like this. It's tough. I am not who I think I am. I am not who you think I am. I am who I think you think I am. people tend to be a little skewed in their self-perception, and other people don't necessarily see them the same way. But if I think you see me like I'm a jerk, then I must have done something jerky for me to believe that you would think that about me, you know?
Yeah.
So
something I heard that's kind of related to that, actually. They said that we're three different people. We're who we think we are, who others think we are, and who we really are. You know, that whole idea of which is what's the truth. You know, mm-hmm. whether it's more than one side of the truth. I mean, things like that, again, drive me crazy. So your quote is right along those lines. It's enough to break my brain. What about you, Hatter? You got any nifty quotes in your bag of tricks?
Yeah, probably the only one that comes to mind at the moment, I've got some better ones if I can think about it, is do what you can with what you have where you are. Always find some humor in something. You can always smile about something.
Yeah, that's good advice. I cringe sometimes at some of the quotes, you know, but you know, that's something that I could get behind for sure. So some people don't know how to be happy. They don't. Anyway, yeah, that's a good one too.
Can we ask anybody?
What were you saying, Hatter?
You ask anybody that's lived into their 90s and just happy. You ask them, what is the trick to living a long life? And they just say, smile a lot, laugh as much as you can.
My grandfather said, you know, have at least one drink every day and smoke them if you got them.
There you go.
He may not have been the healthiest of men.
My mother-in-law says it's about sex, and she's 89.
I love her.
Hello.
Just saying.
Do you got any quotes you want to share?
My favorite quote is by Stephen King, and it's, no one can tell what goes on in between the person you were and the person you become. No one can chart that blue and lonely section of hell. There are no maps of that change. You just come out the other side, or you don't.
Well, damn. We got a lot of good quotes tonight. That's fucking amazing.
That is hanging above my desk.
That's the same thing. And since we're always somewhere between who we were and who we're becoming, so we are always in that lovely hellish hotel.
You know, a lot of lines, a lot of times, you know, the stuff that you know abounds on the site, write about trying to be the best that they can be, and my mind, you know, that's kind of what that reminds me of. You know, people are always struggling with, you know, who they are and who they want to be and how people perceive them, and you know, all kinds of things that you know, and like you were saying, Penny Bird, too, you know, people, you know, look at you a certain way, and you know, your quote kind of alludes to the differences with between how people see you and
right.
Convoluted mess of. Yeah. How about you, Sky? You got any good quotes?
Well, I messed up the prompt, so I'm unprepared. I didn't do my homework because I thought we were writing to your favorite prompt. I didn't read the whole thing.
That's fine.
So I'm going to have to pick the quote that's on my profile because it would take me forever to try to choose one other than that right now. But on my profile, it has always been, when twilight draws near, when you are pushed to the very limits of your soul, when it seems all you have left are the dead remnants of the fabric of your life, believe. And it's from a song by Disturbed. So, if anybody knows who Disturbed is.
What? No, they have one of their songs about a favorite what club?
The flag is probably my computer, so I'll probably be 2 seconds ahead or behind everybody, which is going to suck, so I apologize. I said I have a favorite Einstein quote. Can you finish what you were saying first?
No. I was just going to comment because she mentioned Disturbed, and I don't even remember which song it is. I just remember that it was like the embodiment of the name of the band, the statement that he made. It was something really disturbing. I mean, and I don't even, it was that disturbing that I blocked it. I don't remember what it was. It was one of those things. You know, he was just commenting on the state of something, and it was really bad. It's a good example of what, of, you know, I guess where it comes from, or, you know, find sometimes. Anyway, it was too vague. I was happy that you interrupted. Let me leave it at that. And the benefit of being 2 seconds behind you is the view. Are you gonna say, go ahead, Pretty Bird.
Okay, so my favorite Einstein quote, or a quote attributed to Einstein, who the heck knows the internet, it says, everyone is a genius. So if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, it will live its whole life thinking that it's stupid. And I absolutely love that quote because it's the difference between, especially what, like, young children growing up thinking that they don't know anything, or they can't learn anything, or they're the stupid kids in class. It's all how you treat them or encourage them. And with adults, it's easy to think everybody knows all their talents, but, you know, we don't, you know. Some of us like to think we do, but we don't. And so when people, you know, encourage us or say, remind us of those things, it goes a long way, because it's all we hear are things like, well, how come you can't do that? I'm like, well, yeah, my brain doesn't work that way, so sorry. You know, because people have all kinds of different talents and all kinds of different strengths and all kinds of different things. So if you're always judging them by their weakest ability, they'll never think they're anything more than that. So I kind of have always loved that, because A, it's colorful, B, it's Einstein, and C, it's true.
You know, you mentioned the internet. I always find it so disappointing when I find out a quote that's attributed to someone wasn't said by them. There's a lot of those floating around, and I can't think of a specific example. But, you know, I love some of the Dr. Seuss quotes. He's got some really beautiful ones. Oh. And, you know, you always think of Cat in the Hat when you think of him, or at least I do. So it's hard to attribute, you know, that kind of philosophy to Dr. Seuss.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Insane.
Yeah. Yeah. One about relationships that was, you know, kind of profound, and I'm trying to remember exactly it was. You know, it usually pops up, like, if you look at some of the things that are attributed to him as one of the first or second ones that he said. It's a very popular one of his.
The one about minding and matter?
Mind and matter?
Yeah, apparently. The only one that I can remember from him is something about, you know, basically being who you are, because those who matter don't mind, and those who mind don't matter.
Right. Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, God, everyone's so quiet. I'm so used to people being rude and talking all over each other.
Oh, crap.
I'm sorry?
That's on me. Poor Deb. She's like, I've been waiting 10 minutes. Okay. Hi, Deb. I am so sorry. I'm usually on the ball, but I can't get to my regular computer, so I'm on this little tiny thing, and it only shows me half the screen, and I forget that I have to scroll. I am so sorry.
No problem. I just wanted to call.
Are you there? Hello? Oh, there you are. Okay.
Hello.
I hope we entertained you. I'm sorry.
Wow. Yeah, it's all good. I was just wondering who had the door. I was going to ring the bell, but I didn't want to be rude.
It wouldn't have been rude. It would have been appropriate, I guess, if we weren't letting you in. I'm sorry.
Move on, Colin.
Seriously. So that's not your favorite quote, though, is it? I mean, I imagine you like to shop, but, you know, that's not a quote that I would attribute to you, Deb.
Nah. Although I do have to admit, once upon a time, for 5 minutes, I was an Avon lady.
Me too. But we didn't have to say Avon calling. That was before me.
Yeah, it was before my time, too. I was just trying to be clever.
My dad was a couple
brushmen. By the time we tried it out, you just passed around the catalog and said, you know, you want some, let me know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Avon, when you said Avon calling, my mind went right to Edward Scissorhands. And little interesting factoid that has nothing to do with anything. That was filmed in Zephyr Hills, which is about half an hour away from me. And that little neighborhood was brand new at the time. And now it's kind of crappy. But their little house, our little houses up and down the street, they're all real houses. Of course, you know, there's the end of the road is a dead end. But now they're not all pink and green and whatnot, and they kind of look like every regular normal house, and they're not all fancy or brand new, but it's just really interesting to drive around there because it's, you know, it's Florida, and I never get to see any of that stuff, so I was fascinated. It's in my own backyard.
And I guess let's just take a quick check. I imagine some people have bedtimes and time constraints, so let me double check on who needs to get out quick.
I have half an hour.
Okay.
Yeah, me too.
I know. Sky goes to bed early. Are you gonna hang with us, sweet, tonight? Do you know? You all right?
I'm gonna hang. To about 10:50, or whatever, 10:15 my time.
Awesome. All right. So let's start on a sad note, and have Sky read. She brought something depressing.
I switched my miserable poem because I thought we were ready to your quote, and I brought a miserable piece, but I switched it out now in a panic.
Okay.
All right. It's happier. It's both. Depends how you look at it. So, no, I picked one for the quote that I did. When twilight draws near, when you are pushed to the very limits of your soul, when it seems that all you have are the dead remnants of the fabric of your life, believe. So there's hope in the end. But I did not pre-read this, so please forgive me. I always pre-read, so I would be doing this cold, so forgive me. This is an old one. It's from 2010, so I don't know, it's like 11 years old now. And it's called As I Write in the Chill of Her Season by Sky Darkholm. November holds me as awkward silences tear holes in a thin skin of white fabric. She wakes me with blame and tiny regrets that tuck themselves in each shadow glow. I beg her to leave the lights on, to draw an idle lover's speech on tongue, to crawl under blankets, forget the dangers waiting on painted streets and abandoned flat cars. I tell her I have 700 threads that serve as walls, Egyptian twilight spinning into dawn, a yarn of stars suspended like a tide. When she asked to be let in from the dark, my body a cave, sometimes a hollow place, but it keeps me afloat when worlds are heavy, when gray songs reflect scratches far below the surface, unclean and written in the past. I ask her to pay no attention to insecurities, phantom languages trembling beneath cracked ribs, tucked into naked shelves, neatly shelved in dresser drawers, and sung in winter months. I ask her to form the words of soft fevers that leapt into bodies, a sheen of dew from droplets hanging in the air, to remember sleepless nights as I watched letters curve and sonnets burst, when I floated on rafter lights hidden from the dead zones of every memory once blocked out. Slowly coming into focus, eating away at my soul like shallow mud sipped between chipped teeth. And as I write in the chill of her season, I ask her to remember where all those beautiful moments lived, where I didn't have to lie or hide, when I had the courage to ask to be let in from the dark. End poem.
Wow. I love the way you closed that, the thought of the memories that you mentioned. And, you know, as always, you use such beautiful metaphors, the stars, the yarn of stars. That's, wow, that's amazing. That's quote-worthy itself. I mean, the whole thing is gorgeous. I love reading you. Let me get you a few comments.
Thank you.
Deb, can you start?
Oh, sure, yeah. Sky, sometimes I just get so pulled into your voice mixed with the words that I can't believe that you have such power with your pen to pull people in the way you do. So some of the pieces here, I guess I could really pick any. Wow, phantom languages trembling beneath cracked ribs. I was like, man. When I found I floated on rafter lights hidden from the dead zone, I love that. But I'm trying to, and I write in the chill of her season, I ask her to remember where all those beautiful moments lived. I mean, that ending there, but I'm trying to find, I can't find what I really, it's all amazing, so I'll just stick with, I have 700 threads that serve as walls, Egyptian twilights spinning into dawn, the yarn of stars suspended like a tide. I mean, so many amazing details that not only give us visuals, but tug on heartstrings and pull emotion from us too. And then little tender details, like tucked into naked sleeves. It's just, there's always a myriad of the feelings that come and go and twist and turn from beginning to end when you read. This is really incredible. And again, that ending, when I had the courage to ask to be let in from the dark. So like then there, we're back to insecurities. So it was just like, powerful stuff in the sky. Oh, and congratulations.
Oh, thank you. And thank you.
Sweet Pea, what'd you think?
Well, I loved she was explaining the tiny breath that tucked themselves in each shadow world. I don't like regrets and shadows. I don't like regrets at all. But there's something about shadows. Sometimes we look behind and and wonder what's creeping behind in that shadow. And I love the imagery in that. I don't like anything that wakes me with blame, but I like how you alliterate all of that in there. Because once again, you're brilliant. And sometimes I get very jealous of you and want to just, you know, go up in that attic and beat you with that wet noodle thing. But I don't, because, you know, I love to hear you read and write and do all those beautiful things. But I ask you to pay no attention to insecurities, phantom language trembling beneath cracked ribs. I swear, the way you write, I just want to sit in the corner and suck my thumb and go, I'm not a poet. I'm not a poet. The sky is. But I love you, and I appreciate you.
Not even true.
I just value your talents. I know that, but I just value your talents. You're a wonderful poet, and I love them. Thank you. Another beautiful writer, my dear.
Thank you, sweet.
You're welcome.
And Mad Hatter.
Yeah, you know, Sky, there's a little darkness. You wrote a little darker back then. Let me ask you, when you started writing, did you rhyme? Or did you rhyme when you first started poetry, or were you free the whole time?
I was a rhymer. But I was a really weird rhymer, because I would go in and out of rhyme. It was more, I don't know what it was called, but if you read my old stuff, a lot of it goes in and out.
Yeah.
It'll rhyme like a quarter, and then a third, and then like it just keeps, it just does. But I was more of a rhymer.
And I'm going to say this, knowing you now, how you write, I'm going to say this is 10 years old. Because it's not as good as what you write now, but it's complete and it's free, and the storyline is good, but it's 10 years old, like you said. I think you write much better now. I think I'm missing the words that you.
Yeah, my old stuff is much more raw. I really wrote for myself. It wasn't creative art. I put more creative art into it. My older stuff is much more just my feelings. There's not so much metaphor, so it's easier to tell what I was thinking or feeling.
I think now I'm lacking the metaphor.
hide my emotion and my metaphor now. I'm much more closed than I was, because here I was just writing for myself. I didn't have to cloak anything. So my older writes are more bare. And just what I was feeling. So,
still a man.
Thank you, Hatter.
Pretty bird. Last word.
First, I don't think that this is any worse at all. I think it's just different, but it's open and it's pure and it's beautiful. And I'm going to be all philosophical and wrong about it. Because I read this as I write The Chill of Her Season, as in the winter of years, as an older self to that child that still hasn't been healed, or that younger self that is still reads words. And it is painful, and it is beautiful, and it is hard to reflect that way. My body, a cave, sometimes a hollow place, but it keeps me afloat when worlds are heavy, when gray songs reflect scratches far below the surface, unclean and written in the past, where you just can't wash it off, where you feel stained and you just can't get it off your skin. And then here there's this line, where is it, I will find it. To remember sleepless nights as I watched letters curve and forms burst, and that is so freaking beautiful, and it is just as lovely as anything you write today, and absolutely engaging, and a little uncomfortably familiar, that place that kept you safe, and you can't break free from it, and not quite sure if you want to, because it's kept you safe, and it's just really emotive and fabulous.
Thank you.
Like she is.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you.
Oh. Where do we go from here? Deb was one of the first to drop.
On board, Deb, do you want to read them?
I'm sorry. What'd you say? No, I was going to say Deb, so we're picking along the same one.
Perfect. Because you didn't get a chance to say your favorite quote, Deb, so you put them up on the board. So let us know.
Oh, I was just, as usual, I can never pick one, so I just put them all. But I actually wrote to the one that you shared because I hadn't heard it, and I've written to my favorites before, but I did put them there.
Uh-huh.
One is the best and most beautiful thing in the world cannot be seen or even touched. They must be felt with the heart, by Helen Keller. And let no one ever come to you without leaving happier, Mother Teresa. And then this one, it's like my quote. If I could, I would share it with Stevie Nicks. It's me, but never have I been a blue, calm sea. I've always been a storm. They're my favorite.
That's cool.
And I'm getting the poem. Sorry, I wasn't. So anyway, like I said, your quote screamed at me.
Uh-huh.
And even though I tried to steer it away, I couldn't. It gave me a chance to get mouthy, so I went with it. Anyway, this is called Kid Gloves and Sugar-Coated Conversation. Here we go. We travel down footpaths paved with broken eggs, choking on the burst of rage that we ate for lunch. Triggering the slideshow that's showing all the grins on the two-faced swamp scum that we itch to punch. People can candy coat bacon strips and words, too. Leaving the truth is the shell game shuffled round, rotating all the facts neath the split walnut domes. Lies that spread are gilded like the birdcage round. Tongues are forked and faux halos hide the horns. But as the tongues wag and the venom and lies are spit, sporting that brown stained nose and toilet breath, smiles hide snarls and the perfume hides the shit. The lines that we bite the tongue to silence fester, and the teeth we grind, plastering a smile on ache. Then the screens of smoke plumes rise, dissipating as the pink mirror glass cracks, then pictures break. Cutting through all the small talk and juggler slashing, folks dressed in plastic smiles fill the church pews. Sweet now, then back to cold backstabbing by noon. They step over home beds with no food and shoes, just to buy the pumpkin spiced coffee in a paper cup. Herded in and out like old horses in the petting zoos. And plot.
Wow. I really like this. I could see when you why you said that the quote grabbed you, because I know you know, when I first heard it, it was the same thing with me. I pondered, you know, what they were trying to say about, you know, the double meanings and you know, the whole idea of arguments and you know, trying to say something and someone saying that's not what you said. You know, the complete misunderstanding, the complete when two people, you know, I want just a legal term, when they talk about, you know, being of the minds, it's like, well, there's no chance of that, you know, sometimes the way people do things. And you bring out, you know, a couple of different things You know, the whole walking on eggshells. You know, when we get conscious of how someone feels and we're speaking to someone, you know, and you just don't want to ignite the situation, you don't want to get into it, it changes the way we speak towards each other. And sometimes, you know, we do ourselves a disservice and we bury something or you know. But, you know, at the same time, I understand it because it feels unavoidable. It's like you don't want to see that explosion. You know, if you say it, that there's going to be that fight. You know, it makes me think of a stupid joke that's not so stupid, because if you're stupid enough to say it, you know, you deserve the fight. You know, the woman asked the guy what's on TV, and he goes, dust. But I mean, you know, so something like that, you know. I don't know. But there's a lot of emotion in what you put too, and you know, I really loved it. This was great, Deb.
Thank you so much, Rack. I'm glad.
What about you, Pretty Bird? What'd you think?
I love chocolate covered things. But because, you know, that people can candy coat bacon and, you know, bacon strips and words too. And, you know, I'll take the bacon, y'all, and they can just keep their mouth shut. But there's so many things in here. The lines that we bite, the tongues to silence fester. And that line sticks out to me in a huge way because it's hard to cater your speech to everybody that you're speaking to, you know, and if everybody is themselves and speaks without thinking at all, then everybody else's feelings get hurt. But then you're pretty much choking on your own tongue because, you know, for trying to please somebody else, you're trying not to hurt somebody else. And that's the problem. I am always read wrong, like and taken wrong and whatever, because I tend to be a little quick. But I swear I'm just as sweet as can be, you know. My unfortunate verbiage sometimes comes off very, very clipped. So I completely understand the whole trying to rephrase things, trying to reword things, trying. So sometimes, you know, maybe it's not worth the trouble. I don't have to say anything. It's fine. And so that line really, really, really stuck out to me, because when you don't say it and it sticks in your craw, you know, you end up being kind of miserable and then things explode later on, which is unpleasant all around. You touch on a lot here. As the pink mirror glass cracks and figures break, cutting through all the small talk and the jugular slashing, you know, those rose-colored glasses are a bitch. First, they trick you. They're like, you know, ecstasy. And then, yeah, they shatter your perception of everything, even yourself sometimes, because, you know, those rose-colored glasses make everything all fabulous, and it hurts when they come off or when they get broken and you get stabbed in the face with them. It hurts, you know, it's just unpleasant. And the way you put this all is very colorful, but there are some really profound thoughts in this, and they kind of stick out, and if anybody has been through any of it, then the words have a lot of weight.
Awesome comment. Thank you, Pretty Bird. So sad and true in many of the aspects you just mentioned.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Life, yeah. You know, it ain't easy.
Can you comment, Sweet?
Yeah, this is kind of, I agree with Pretty Bird, because this is kind of me in a nutshell. Perception of someone is, you know, well, you know, got something to say, you know, you're going to say it, and that either makes you a hardcore this or a hardcore that, or you're just mean or you're just that. You know, there are 100 ways to use a dozen eggs, or there's 100 ways to say screw you and not let anybody know you said. I'm more of the app of just walking up to you and say, screw you. Take it as it may be. But, you know, sometimes there are delicate ways and sometimes there's not. And some people just don't like it. And, you know, those rose-colored glasses come off, and whether you're the one pulling them off or you're the one wearing them, you know, it is. Sometimes you have to be more delicate than not, and sometimes you have to crack a lot of eggs. And I like the way this is put and the way it's said and the way it is. It's done beautifully and to the quote very well. And I think, you know, Deb does it in perfect rhyme and metaphor and imagery and, well, you know, better than anybody else. I guess rhyme's not really in this one, but I love the way you write. I love the message in this one.
Damn sweet. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Jeez.
What'd you think, Potter?
Yeah, never ceases to amaze me. Just, I mean, she writes so deep, and I can find certain things I think she's trying to say, and I don't know if it's purposely or not. But then she comes, she seems to come
here
back out of it, and then redefined it. Huh? I sort of find you hard to follow because I tend to go deep in what you're trying to say. And so I have to always reread your stuff. You see, you got me.
Yep. Thanks, Hatter. Yeah, you'll find some interesting stuff the second time and maybe even the third time because a lot of stuff going on.
That's good. You can have the last word, this one.
Did you say Sky? I'm sorry.
You're the only one that didn't comment. Yes, please.
There was a lot going on in here, and I felt a lot of different angles. One that I did see that was, when I was reading at least, that wasn't really picked up on, so I don't know if I'm misreading it, but it was the idea of double speak and hypocrisy. Thank you. And yes, thank you. I know we're all with those pretty smiles and those sweeter words, but it's not backed up by either action or honesty or pure intention. So many try to show what they think their smile should look like rather than showing what it truly looks like. And for the right reasons, for the pure reasons, not for vanity or for show. And it hurts in the end more profoundly than I think it would hurt if they were just not truthful in the beginning. And then you have sachets of course, those different types of people. You know, I think there's like, it could be me, but to me, there's three types of people in here weaving in and out. And, you know, those people that perhaps do walk on eggshells or perhaps don't say certain things for more genuine reasons in fear of hurting someone, or perhaps, you know, having the backlash of being honest in the past and having it, you know, kind of backfire. And so those people are a little bit more close up. And then, of course, you have those people that are more quoted. I don't want to say they're more, but they're quote-unquote more brass or more forward, and then they always tend to be, oh, well, that person's being a blank, you know, when that person is actually being honest. So truly they're the best ones, because even though you may not like what they always have to say, it's always honest, it's always truthful. And I believe that in the end is the best policy. And, you know, if it hurts a little bit, then maybe you should look at yourself for a second and say, okay, why don't I like what I'm hearing? Is there truth behind it? Are they saying it just to hurt me, or do they truly mean it? And is it truly something I don't like about myself rather than I don't like them saying it? And I think that is very hard, too, to decipher for people. You know, when someone says something we don't like, we automatically want to blame it on them. Well, what are they saying? Why are they saying that? They're not a good person. But sometimes it's just a reflection of what we don't want to hear. So, you know, I see an interplay of these three different types of people that can categorize everybody. People fit in either one of these categories all the time. And so I like that. I like to kind of like, you know, kind of going back and forth with it. And I might have read it differently, but that's kind of how I saw it. So great job. That's it. And comment. I said a lot.
Thank you very much. Sensed a little bit of psychology in there, Sky.
Awesome. I was going to say, let's put Sweet up next.
Sure. Okay, let's put Sweet up. That ought to be fun. The quote. Okay. The quote I wrote to is by Grace Slick. It is, "When you learn the truth is a lie, anger follows." Razor blade teardrops create share of cheek scars. Bruises hide under painted clown smiles. Nails crawl in flesh, drawing half-crescent moons. Broken mirrors tell tales in Black Knight's kingdom. Wizards mix poison potions from the hiss of a venom snake. As death match in knockout round, a paranoia replay. Cracked plastic doll, lips move in silent movie missteps, whispering sweet dreams on a bed of nails, good night wish. Drink the whiskey, swallow the pills, count the sheep. Black and blue eyes covered in red roses and apple pie promises. Throw the nine, no blood to bleed, attack and hide. Cast shadows of happiness into pools of sorrow. Games played half-truth, protect your lover needs. Crush controlled, once broken and now amused. Revenge is sweet. Remember, I can lie too. End poem.
Oh. Wow. You hit me right in the beginning when you mentioned the broken mirrors and then the wizard's potions and things like that. And right down to drink the whiskey. That was also awesome. But I mean, yeah, remember, I can lie too. That's wow. It's a chilling thought. It's depressing. You know, well, talk about letting the air out of the room. Wow. It's good. It's good. I like it. It's reality, and we need to let it out and face it and look it in the eyes. I mean, those rose-colored glasses that we were talking about before don't help. At least I don't think so. Sometimes we cling too hard to that imagery, and we need to realize that when the truth isn't the truth. And the saddest part of that to me too is some people prey on the fact that you wouldn't think that they would ever consider telling you something that wasn't true, or denying that truth to you. You know, it's like sometimes when someone speaks to you, you just take it for granted that they're telling you what's in their heart, and you don't doubt it. And some people realize that and play off that, and that really hurts even more than the lie itself sometimes, because they're taking advantage of what you thought and how you felt and your vulnerability, and that's kind of what this speaks to me of. It's beautiful. But, again, heart-wrenching. Sky, you could start off.
Can you get me later? I was multitasking, and I heard her. I just don't want to half-ass my comment. Sorry. Can you pick me up last?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you.
I felt guilty because I didn't pick you first yet. Pretty Bird,
yeah.
I know you got something to say about this one.
Don't I always? It breaks my heart a little bit, and yet it is, you did it to your damn self, which I kind of love that little dig at the end, where you go through it all, and you start by cutting us open with razor blade teardrops and those scarred pair of cheeks.
because, you know, that sweet, innocent, trusting face forever stained and bloodied by either lies or untruths or half-truths or misperceptions or whatever the case may be. And when you see it, you can't unsee it. You can't unknow that. It's a long road back to trust. It takes a lot longer to try to heal and a whole hell of a lot of love to want to heal. Because so many just walk away. But when you're in the middle of this, where people aren't exactly what you thought they were, you kind of get pissed off because you were hoodwinked, bamboozled. It is not okay. And it hurts. And so hurt and anger are pretty much, you know, married. And sometimes when you get a bit young, there is that, you know, revenge is sweet. And I kind of love, you know, the whole because you're sweet. Remember, I can like you. And nobody ever considers that crap. Everybody who does something less than honest, that changes how you define a relationship or friendship, whatever it is, once they're like, oh, sorry, my bad. They think that everything is hunky dory. Dude, there are consequences. Watch it. And I kind of love that at the end because it's all the pain, all the pain, all the pain. And then, well, you know what? If this is how you want it, you got it. And so I kind of love it, too. It's awesome. Extremely painful, but awesome.
Thank you.
What you think, Debs?
Well, for starters, I'm one of Sweet's biggest fans. I think that nobody writes like Sweet, and I'm always in awe of stuff like razor blade teardrops and cherub cheek scars. I mean, come on, nails claw into flesh, drawing half crescent moons. I also find it, I don't know if intriguing is the right word, but that doesn't matter, how often when we're writing in this genre, in this feel, that mirrors come into play, and she's got the broken mirrors that tell tales in Black Knight's kingdom, wizards mix poison potions from the hiss of a venomed snake as a deathmatch in knockout rounds of paranoia replay. Wow. Paranoia replay. That's like that hauntingness, something that's in your mind eating at you. You're paranoid and you're swearing. People are around you and looking at you and trying to get you, and it won't go away, and it plays over and over, and you're driving yourself insane. So the little details bring the anger and rage that you see in the photo to life. And the black and white lies covered in red roses. It's so sadly cliche, not the words, but the fact that we can so readily tie a man or woman giving their significant other flowers to the fact that they must have been trying to cover something up, did something wrong. How many people have you heard say, oh, he wore you flowers, he must be cheating. How sad is that? So all the little details in here had my head spinning, which usually happens when I listen to Sweet Pea read, so, like, awesome stuff.
Thank you. Thank you.
Monsieur Chapeau.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm reading that.
That's all right.
I'm lost. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I do two things at once, and not very good at any one of them.
Well,
yeah, I get lost when she speaks as well. You ready for us, Sky?
Yes, I'm sorry. I just didn't want to. I can't give my Sweet a half-assed comment like, "Oh, this is nice." You know, this piece just it kind of rips at your soul. When you find those lies and mistruths and the people that we're supposed to trust and that are supposed to love us the most, there's no greater pain, I don't think, in any kind of relationship, whether it be a partnership, you know, an intimacy or other kinds of relationship. When we feel that we trust somebody and we feel that we love them and we start unraveling what we thought, what we know is truth, you know, and then I think there follows kind of like a revolving door of emotion, which I think you brought in your piece, because we don't quite know how to land. You know, there's that brokenness, there's those shadows, there's that sorrow, and then at the very end, you know, there's that anger too, and those flashes of anger, and you just can't help that all of these emotions are kind of enveloped, but also kind of circulating, because you're trying to get a hold and grasp what actually happened, because there's also denial and disbelief, so you kind of make those rounds. And I kind of see that in your piece, that kind of displacement. I enjoyed it very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Take a bow, sweet. Take a bow. Let's listen to Kay's SoundCloud next.
Sure.
And Sky, I know you like to pre-read. If you want to do, I'm going to do, I think, Sunshine next. But you need the reader. So if you want to pre-read that too.
I'll read it during the comments so I don't miss Kay's poem. So if you could just
thank you.
Call on me
thank
first.
You.
Okay, yeah. All right.
Are you guys ready? Here we go.
So in response to the prompt, there are many quotes that I really love. But this one I decided to dust off and bring out. And the quote that I am referencing goes like this. There's always a little truth behind every, just kidding. A little knowledge behind every, I don't know. A little emotion behind every, I don't care. And a little pain behind every, it's okay. And I call this, Sometimes No Words Are Better, by Kay. She wanted a proposal for Christmas, of which he was never going to give. Check the hood. Give good service. But it's too damn cold to get out from the covers. To sit in isolation is better than to face what causes pain. She thought that there could be other ways around the situation, that there will be no answers anyway as to the pain. Feeling like a failure never looks so damn good, she thought sarcastically. How do you wear it? As the old saying goes, there is truth to every little thing said. Stop kidding yourself. Alone is always better. At least no one can hurt you but yourself. But if you have someone who loves you, one will not be alone. Swimming in the island of one is better than being shark-finned. As words cut, watch your tongue. Leave the baggage out the door. Because behind every sarcastic thing said to her is truth, which is why she's an island of one, as she sees through it all. What was wrong with it? If you have to ask, it's over your head. And poem.
Wow. I like this. My friend used to always say, many a truth is said in jest, which sounds to me like a simpler version of what she said. But I like the elaboration of the thought of the additional emotions to, you know, when someone leaves things out and whatnot, and you know, and that always makes me think of Pretty Bird with the lies of omission, because, you know, some people just ignore that or don't count it. So, you know, you'll always have credit in my brain for that one. But the thoughts that you bring out, Kay, I mean, it's lovely, but, you know, I don't know why I'm hung up on that she wanted a proposal, Chris, for some reason. I guess I wanted the voice to be, you know, more
autobiographical, I guess, but it doesn't feel that way to me. But, you know, I'm sure it's stuff that you've seen and been through. I mean, I'm a little befuddled, I guess. But, I mean, it's clear what you were saying about, you know, when someone says something that they you know, to try and get away with it, that putting the LOL on the end of it to get away with it, that's obnoxious to me. I mean, I don't like that thought. As much of a smartass as I am, you know, I try and at least be sincere when I say something, and even when I'm kidding around, you know. But you know, not everyone is like that, and I guess that's depressing too, and that speaks to people's character. So yeah, this is thoughtful and you know, a little deep. I really enjoyed it. Okay. Thank you. Hatter, what'd you think?
Deb and Hatter both dropped.
Okay. Sweet Pea.
It's just you and us girls.
I couldn't be happier. Well, yes, I could. We could all be in the same room, damn it. I guess we are in the same room. Sweet Pea, can you come in for Kay?
Yes, I can. I think it's kind of cool. I like the quote she wrote you. I like the idea that swimming in an island of one is better than being sharks and just words cut, watch your tongue. I do think that behind every sarcastic thing to say said to her is true. I mean, that's kind of sad because I'm kind of sarcastic too. And not everything I say is true, especially if somebody opens you up. You're like, yeah, there you go, bada bing. But you know, I guess to some people that could be true. The quote, you know, and I love the ending. If you have to ask, it's way over your head. Excuse me, but you know. You don't have to be in a world where everything you turn around, it's going to be painful, or somebody's dogging you, or somebody's doing that. You know, go be free. Leave your baggage at the door. Go and, you know, live your life kindly and be kind. And I think that's what, you know, this is all about, is be loving, be kind, be what, and surround yourself with that kind of people in your life. And that's what I really like about Kay, is she's really always about that love and that kindness as much as, you know, she can possibly be.
The thing I find funny about that quote too is because, you know, thinking about it, you kind of value sincerity, but when someone's being sarcastic, it's like, you know, hey, wait a minute. It reminds me of the Southern charm, bless your heart.
Bless your heart, yeah, that's true.
Pretty Bird, can you comment?
Yeah. I caught that same line, but it pinned me a little bit. Behind every sarcastic thing said to her is true. Now, that's not necessarily something that everybody's saying, but when you are attached to somebody and the ground shifts beneath your feet, it's hard to discern what is and isn't laced in that hint of truth, especially if you hear them spend all this time talking about others with that clipped tone and knowing exactly what they mean, that when you hear it, not necessarily at you, but in conversation with you, that, you know, it kind of wants to trigger those words here. And so that's a painful thing. And it's usually just one or a few that get under your skin that way, where the fear is that it is true. So you have to take it like it's true, because you can't know that it's not, and asking will make you feel like you're an idiot. So that kind of spoke to me in a very real way. There's another part in here. If you have someone who loves you, one will not be alone. And that's so not true. I wish it were true. you know? And I love the idea of it in both ways, even because alone is better. At least no one can hurt you but yourself. But if you have someone, you know, but I think that, that part of that is there's the honest side of that, which you technically won't be alone, but then there's the deeper, more painful side of that, that you can be absolutely in love with somebody sitting right next to you, still be the loneliest person on the planet. And that's a deeper loneliness than when you're actually alone. So I can be alone all day and night. I am good with silence. I'll speak to myself. I am fine. But when, for whatever reason, those moments are 1,000 miles between people 3 feet apart, it's excruciating and hollow and silent and heavy. So love is definitely not the cure-all. But I kind of love that this touches on all of these different components, you know? Feeling like a failure never looks so damn good, she thought sarcastically. How do you wear it? Well, I don't know. I can, depending on my mood, I can live that line or laugh at that line. So, you know, all things, all about, you know, perspective. But I love that there's a lot to ponder in her words. There always is. And I enjoy that aspect because, you know, you got to love words that make you think or make you feel. And when they make you do both, it's awesome. Sweetie has a dog. She is off to Wyoming in the morning. So just letting you know.
Okay. And that line that you mentioned, I usually say delusions of adequacy. Anyway.
Adequacy, I suppose that's a different kind of adequacy. So it's all encompassed in that delusion of adequacy. It doesn't say which side that falls on.
Well, when you give someone what you think is what they need, what they want, you know, and you believe that that's what you're giving them, and then it turns out you fall short. To me, that's like, you know, oh, well, I screwed up.
Well, trying to see what you think somebody wants you to be, or trying to give them what you think they need, and not picking up on clues to what, or asking outright if you don't know what they might actually be able to use as far as support or whatnot, to me is miscommunication, and it's a common miscommunication because a lot of people are like, well, if you loved me, you would know. I'm like, bullshit. If you don't tell them, they can't read your mind. And if you don't ask, you'll never be right. And it's a simple thing. But that kind of honesty hurts. And so people tend to avoid it.
Yeah, well, I somewhat agree with the idea of if you love me, you would know. But at the same time, it don't hurt to give him a hint. Help me along a little bit if I'm, you know, quote unquote, and I say this very tongue in cheek, blind to it. But anyway, before we get sidetracked, go ahead.
Go ahead, who?
You. You were in the middle of talking.
Oh, okay. You can learn habits and have a reasonable expectation of things, but, you know, we don't ever stop growing or changing or perceiving things differently, and the hope is that we keep on elevating our essence to a certain degree, and so there is no degree of certainty, you know? I can say I don't like pepperoni on my pizza. And I don't like pepperoni in my pizza, except for if they're really, really crispy, then I'll pick them off of your pizza, but I don't want them on mine. So it's not that I hate pepperoni. I just don't really care for pepperoni pizza, you know? So generally speaking, no pepperoni is the best bet. However, that's not to say I'm never going to eat a bit of pepperoni. So you know, you can only know so much of anybody, you know? That's all I'm saying.
You still with this guy? Can you comment for Kay?
Yeah, I love this, and there is a truth in bad humor. and how people can both disguise humor or disguise bullying with humor. And, you know, there are people that, you know, let me back up. You know, I think there's a truth in saying actually case as often, which is know your audience. And it's something that I say too. When you have humor, you one need to know your audience. Two, you need to know where lines are. And if you don't know where the lines are, then don't go anywhere near the lines. And you have to be genuine about your humor, because a lot of people are very hurtful to it, and there are those that do it in good nature, and then there are so many that do it in disguise of bullying, or disguise bullying into humor. More often than not, it's bad. That's bad humor. And not saying that I don't like humor, but there's a difference between bad humor aimed to hurt you, or humor that is meant because you know the other person so well that you know your limits and you know where you're coming from, and it's done from a good place. I mean, Stephen and I, we cut into each other all the time, but we know each other's personality, and we have that kind of friendship, that kind of banter, where I can press a terrible button on him and he laughs, and he can press a terrible button and I laugh, because we're such good friends that line is okay for us, and we know that line is okay for us, and we know it's in good humor. But it's important to know your audience, you know, like I said.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there's I like when she says she says shark fins, because I love that she brought in that reference. And I think that sometimes when these words, they cut into people so deeply that people do end up enveloping themselves in fear of getting hurt, in fear of being kind of runned over and maybe avoid certain situations where they can be hurt. And I think that I think that this is brilliant, brilliantly done. And in the end, you know, I'm not sure. I could be reading into it wrong, but when she says, if you have to ask, it's over your head, to me that speaks more of if you have to ask why bad humor or these types of things, these sarcasms, these little things that we say underneath our breath. The beginning I thought was, I think she should have moved the author's notes to like an introduction, because that itself was like a little poem, you know, always a little truth behind every just kidding and a knowledge behind every I don't know. You know, there's a level of caring and not caring. And there is always a bit of caring and I don't care. There are so many things that we brush off, and we give them, we discredit them, I guess, is what I want to say. We discredit our emotions, and we discredit cruelty or bullying to just, oh, it was just a joke. Well, it wasn't to me. So what does that mean? Where does that leave us? And I think that people that don't understand that won't ever get it. I think that's true. Those people that don't understand that simple basic truth that there are differences, you know,
right,
they if they don't get that, then they just won't. So hopefully one day they'll learn that kind of compassion. But and I think that's what the last line means. I could be wrong, but that's how I see it. And comment.
And those are usually the
thank
people
you
that you're oversensitive and you have no sense of humor, so, you know, that kind of falls in line with that, with the ones that don't get it, it's always never their fault.
Yeah, and that's because people, like I said earlier, don't like when people throw the truth at them, you know?
Yeah.
Like, oh, they just throw it back. Well, it's you, not me.
Life.
It's you. It's you. It's you. It's not me. Yeah, not okay. It is always that.
I had somebody tell me once, you know, the last thing I wanted to see was my own reflection. You were hell-bent on showing it to me, weren't you? And after having talked to them in a while. And I was like, I'm sorry? Because it's not like I'm like, well, you know, I know you think you're like this, but let me show you what you really look like. I don't come off that way. It's just I see people how I see people. So that kind of came as a surprise, but it's true, you know? Sometimes when you're, you know, I'm going to call myself innocent, but had I had a clue, I don't hurt people on purpose, you know? I mean, push me in a corner, your truth is going to hurt yourself. But I don't go out, I don't ever set out to hurt people. And so I had no clue. I had no clue whatsoever. So, you know, I would absolutely apologize or shut my pie hole. But, you know, so not everybody is that kind of horrible. But many people are. And many people just don't ever want to face that the things they say are mean, because if you mean them in jest and they're not, the person's laughing, you would stop, you know? And so often they don't.
Yeah, and that's a combination of
mellow. You're on the board.
What's on the board?
I said, I just read you on the board, Sky. So apparently I'm going to be reading for Allie because even though she asked, and I heard you, I did hear you, Sky, to be called on first so that she could pre-read it in the comments. She wasn't able to, so she can't move on from one without finishing first. So
you forgot the bro.
Oh, yes. That's so funny. But so how about I read Allie and you read Hatter. How's that?
Okay, as long as you call me first. So I won't be confused.
Right.
Okay, so I have Allie on the board, and I will go ahead and read her. This is a quote that touched my heart by Allie Sunshine 3, and in her author's notes, the quote is, "No man means all he says, and yet very few say all they mean." Oh, that is, yeah. So, oh, this is your quote. Okay, so she wrote your quote. Okay, awesome. It says, it goes like this. Did he mean it each night? Did he mean to tell me I was stupid or could never be a teacher? Did he mean to tell me I'd fail my children in the future? Was that what he truly meant to say? Nights full of yelling, tears streaming down my face. Fear engulfed me as he screamed so loudly about how I wasn't doing what he needed me to do. Me becoming shocked when I learned not all males screamed at their love for not simply doing all they needed at a time. The only night he was calm was when he told me take a pregnancy test. That was the first and last night he treated me with dignity and told me he loved me. This is personal. This is a little aside. This is personal. It's a poem I wrote based off a quote for a team of voices, but it's also a way for me to get some of the trauma out of my mind and into the known for others to know. Even when I say a day is going well, it doesn't mean I don't think about my past. And that's heartbreaking. Okay, and tell them, sorry, my bad. I was just going to start jibber-jabbering like I do, force a habit. No. Because I am not the first commenter.
Please.
You go.
You're on a roll.
No.
Go ahead.
No, listen. Sky has needs.
No. Oh, Sky has needs. Yes. Okay. Miss Sky?
And does that mean I go before a rack? Well, I didn't mean I don't want to go before the host, but I will really quick so I can read Hatter. I thought this was it is. And I do have needs, all right? I need to pre-read. I get really nervous. And it's not my natural state to read aloud. This is just brilliant. I think there is such an honesty, and it isn't easy to bring out pieces like this and to be honest like this and to really put ourselves out and those truths that we don't even really want to accept ourselves, let alone tell everybody else, and kind of be raw and open to the world like this. And, you know, everybody always says, oh, you know, there's a physical abuse. Well, there's also a thing about mental abuse. And these things, like, did he mean it each night? Did he mean to tell me I was stupid and I can never be a teacher? Did he mean to tell me I'd be a failure to my children? And these scars, emotional scars, they run deep, and it's very, very hard to unlearn conditioned when you're conditioned by people that are supposed to love you and that you love, and you kind of go through those motions because you hope that person is who you hope they would be, and yet it is so unhealthy, and it is not hard. Anybody that says, you know, why didn't you just leave this person, they don't understand how hard that is. And, you know, I've never been in a relationship like this, but I have been with someone who went through a very traumatic experience with their, and I mean traumatic, I'm not just a very, 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 and I guess no one can define what is worse than another, because everybody has their different levels, but this person was so, I mean, it was so traumatic for them that it affected them. It affected our relationship. It affected every moment of their lives. And so though I've never experienced this type of relationship myself, it is such a wrong thing to say to somebody, why didn't you leave them? Why didn't you do this? Because everybody has to kind of go through things in their own time and experience things. And who were you to judge their experience? And, you know, I find myself seeing that a lot when people when people see other relationships, like, why weren't you strong enough? Why couldn't you do this? I don't understand that. It isn't for you to understand. It is somebody else's experience, and all you have to do is be there for them and try to support them through that experience or after the trauma of that experience. And because it's them that has to go through it. They don't need you to also put blame on them when they already probably feel that blame themselves. So I think this was a brilliant piece and very brave to come and put it on here. Really well done. That's it.
No, definitely. I thought it was very moving. You know, there's a huge roller coaster involved in for me in what she's talking about. Once that first domino falls, everything comes into question. It's like, you know, when someone says something, you don't want to believe that that's their nature, that they mean what they're saying, that, you know, it's emotional. It's in the heat of the moment, or you know, however you want to, I want to say excuse it, you know, even though you're not really doing that. It's swallow it, you know, whatever it takes to make it palatable, at least in the moment. And then it turns into almost a vicious cycle. And at what point do you turn around and say, you know, okay, I'm not going to believe anything you're telling me anymore? One of my, I won't say favorite, but one of the things that, you know, this also makes me think of is when, you know, you tell someone, I love you, and they think that they're not worthy of it or whatever. You know, I have to step back and say, okay, you know, do you, you know, believe in me? Do you trust my, and do you value it at all? You know, because, you know, then don't tell me, you know, you find it hard to believe or you don't understand when someone says something like that. And that's the opposite of what she's talking about, I know, because she's questioning, you know, when he said, I love you, based on, you know, the other things. It's the exact opposite of what I'm saying. But, it's that whole vicious cycle, I think, that really, you know, makes my brain blow up. This is something that touches very close to home for a lot of us, I think, and, you know, it was very moving to hear, and, you know, I'm really flattered that she was, you know, willing to share that on the show and you know, put herself out there, because it's not easy. You know, I've written about some things that, you know, I've been in the middle of that are hard to look at and hard to see, you know, and that goes back to, you know, what you were talking about, I think, Pretty Bird, a little bit, you know, people looking at themselves in the mirror and realizing what's going on, and not being
easy to look at sometimes, you know, and you know, what Sky was talking about, you know, someone, people telling you, well, why didn't you leave? Yeah, that's a complete lack of understanding on a lot of people's parts. And, you know, I definitely agree with her about, you know, you can, the only thing you could do is be there for someone, because, you know, you don't know all the factors. There was that moment, you know, there were the feelings that you know, made them fall in love and, you know, the whole reasons why people are together. So, you know, to try and question that whole picture, you know, as much as it's falling apart for this person, it's just not fair. You know, you could never really look at a situation like that and get in the middle of it and comment on it like that, which is kind of what I'm trying not to do right now. But, you know, I mean, I really feel for her and you know, the thought that she's bringing up is very, very painful and, you know, it's unfortunately relatable. Go ahead.
Okay, so Bertie's got opinions, and before I delve into the meat of the poem, I want to say something to what you said, because you had said something to the effect of, because I can't quote crap, that when you say you love somebody, if you say I love you to somebody and they can't understand why you would love them, and then you came back with, well, it you value my opinion at all, and not that it ain't about the person who's saying it. It's not that they don't trust that they believe it. They feel unworthy on all counts, and you can't make them believe your words. They have to earn. They have to learn how to trust your words through your actions, and sometimes that's a long road, and that's a lot of trauma to get past. So it's not that they don't believe you, it's that they just don't understand why or how it's possible, and it's a rough place to be. I also think, just for the record, that the word should not exist. It is the worst word in the English language, because what the hell with the should? You should leave. You should have done this. You know, well, kiss my ass. Because here's the thing. When it comes to a relationship, it's not that show. When it comes to a relationship or a friendship or anything that any relationship like that comes with trust, that trust is given freely at the beginning, and things have to be good to gain that place, to get to a place of love. And so when you are emotionally beat down, when you are mentally gaslighted and yo-yoed, when you are made to believe all those horrible things are true, because if they keep on saying it and they know you so well, it must be true. All of those things don't kill hope. The hope is that in there they are still that person that you fell in love with. The hope is there's still all that good that you were attracted to begin with. So whether you would have left that situation, I you know, like whoever is saying you should have done this and you should have done that. Okay, let's say hello to Hatter again. Hey, Hatter. Last comment on Allie's poem. So yeah, that whole judging people by what you think you would do, never having been in that situation, is just completely just. It's almost that level of disregard is like the opposite of what friendship should be to me. And she's very brave to put this out there. And that whole first stanza kicked me in the gut, because it reminds me of my father. Now, my father is old and nice now. Okay, but he was a complete ass. He had his motivation for me, if I would get less than great grades, was like, you're too stupid to work at McDonald's, so I don't know what you think you're going to do if you drop out of school. First of all, I was never going to drop out of school. You know, second of all, I want to work at McDonald's anyway. Third of all, thanks. Thank you for telling me my 3.8 is me being a moron. Appreciate it. But when that's the only thing you ever said, and you never said, hey, great A, hey, good job, hey, I'm proud of you, that's all you hear is you're too stupid to work McDonald's. And when you're growing up, it lingers, and you have to fight to believe in yourself and find it elsewhere. So it kicked me in the gut, that first Did he mean to tell me I was stupid every night? And while it wasn't an every night thing, it still breaks my heart. And so kudos to her for putting it out there and for hoping it helps other people. So that's really awesome.
You didn't hear it, did you, Heather? You didn't hear it, right, Heather?
Oh, no, I didn't.
Okay.
Sorry.
Did you come back to read your poem?
Well, was it read already?
Not yet.
It was read already.
It's on the board, though.
Well, okay.
We got you and Bud left.
Okay, grab mine. I see it there. Okay. Yeah, I went with the that quote, right? Okay. I knew a man that said it all. Here it goes. I met a man that said it all, little he did say. He feared the coming of the past. He never came that way. A man repeats what he wants to see, even if it's wrong. He reads the lines one at a time, then hums a hotter song. Taken back to hear the words, he thought that maybe he was cured. But time ticks on beyond our view. He always talked as if he knew. Because he knew it all.
You're killing me, Hatter.
I wasn't looking at it, so I didn't realize you finished. I'm sorry, but yeah, that speaks volumes of ego to me. I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah, it's brevity or something.
Well, you know, it's I won't say ironic. It's I guess appropriate that you know when you say a little, it's sometimes. You know, today it says a lot because, you know, especially if you don't know what you're talking about, you know, but, you know, it's one of those things, you know, it reminds me of the, what is it, the Samuel Clemens quote, better to be thought a fool and remain silent than open your mouth and remove all doubt.
Yeah.
Oh, great poem, Hatter.
I originally had, then where a line he reads the line one at a time, then hums a Christmas song. I had. I put Hatter there just because I didn't have another word. What do you guys think I should put in there? And hums a.
I love the way it is. Okay.
What'd you say?
I'm just going to jump right in here. Here's the thing. That verse, exactly how it is for me. Broke me a little bit because that is my own personal purgatory. A man repeats what he wants to see, even if it's wrong. And oftentimes our perception of moments in our past amplifies the pain. Sometimes, you know, we get over some stuff, but sometimes we just don't. Sometimes it's there and you remember all the good and all the bad and none of the mediocre crap, which is most of life. And reads the lines one at a time. And, you know, I kind of write everything. And anything that anybody actually writes to me, I treasure like anybody's thing. And unfortunately, I'm the moron. When something strikes me and elates me or something stabs me in the gut, I quote with the date and by whom because I don't ever want to forget. And so, you know, when you go back and you remember things, it kind of breaks you a little bit. And then hums a Hatter song, and for me, a Hatter song is your song, is you know, the word
yeah.
You cannot say, and that
say.
Is the entire problem. But, right, so that Hatter song is perfect, because when you go back to all those moments where you wish you could have said this, or would have said that, or they would have said, or whatever it is, it's always those missing words. And so to me, then hum the Hatter song is just perfect.
Cool. Okay, I'll leave it. Thank you very much.
You still with this guy?
I kind of gravitated to that book.
Yeah, but you know, I was reading it differently, and now that Pretty explained her version of it, I'm reading it again, and I can see that version too. So now I'm pulled between my comments.
It's a long way to see something.
Perspective. No, I know, but I like your perspective. Well, because I think Hatter was saying, how do I take my name out of it? Because to me at first, when you see, I met a man who said it all but had little to say. He feared becoming the ambassador never come his way. And then he repeats, he wants to, you know, even if it's wrong. So automatically my mind goes to those people that only think their voice in the room matters, that they speak so much, right, that they have... that they can never be wrong, and they're very self-centered. They don't give anybody else room to speak. They only care about themselves. And then that made me think why Hatter might wanted him out, because it wasn't really reflective of that, you know, not that Hatter would say it to myself, about himself, I only care. But if you read it in the perspective where you kind of put it, where you say, you know, it leans more towards a different perspective, where one might say, I met a man who just said little, but had little to say. Perhaps a bit of self-deprecating poetry, where we think we have little to say, and then we repeat the words that even though they're wrong, because someone can repeat something they want to believe that isn't true, but because they're hoping so badly it would be true. So it brings in a different perspective completely when you put it in that way. So now I'm torn. I think it's cool either way. I think if you leave Hatter in, it will lean towards that other perspective where I think Pretty was coming from, and which now I've reread it, and I see totally different meaning into it. And if you take the Hatter song out, I think it becomes more negatory towards people that tend to fill a room. But when you leave your name in it, it brings this whole different emotional, that kind of this emotional development that is a little bit of self-searching. Is anybody with me here, or have I lost everybody?
Yes. No, I completely understand.
Yeah, no. how do you make the word Hatter into a link that can link to the song?
Oh, you have to. That? I can tell you that.
You
I don't know if Rack wants me to tell you that on his show.
Okay.
I could tell you how to write it out. If you really want to.
No, I know there's a process. I just don't know. I can't do it on my phone.
Yeah, I can tell you, but I probably don't want to interrupt Greg's whole show for.
It's less than A space href equal quotes, and then the
Mr. Computer Whiz. No.
I'll give you the simple version. Your poem list, right? So it's on your board. You open up the edit text box, the full version, and then you highlight it, and you click the little link button up on top. And it'll say what word do you want it to say, and what link do you want that to link to, and you just type in Hatter and click and paste your link and hit OK, and you're good.
The button that looks like a clip.
So you just have to go to the. Yeah, it looks like kind of a size of like an infinity sign.
Thank you.
There you go. You're welcome. And all we have left is. I'm sorry, I just opened up the board and Sky's like, where's your poem? I'm like, no.
Your fan club is demanding poetry. The masses demand it.
I love how like you're the masses.
I know.
Oh, that's cute. I have been a wee bit stuck up my own rear end lately, so.
Yeah, but you have a thousand poems.
Pick
one of those.
They're not quote-worthy, and, like, they're not about, you know, things. But I put Bud on the board, so there's that. He's got a song.
You want to upload words for us? You could listen to that one.
Oh, yeah, Rack didn't bring a poem either. What's with you people? I'm telling you to put in words.
It's all about everyone else's poetry when I do this.
Well, that's just selfish. We want to hear your poetry, too.
It's all about everybody else. Well, that's just selfish. That's just selfish. So what I want, I can't load anything in the studio because Blog Talk hates my guts today and makes me fully useless. But I'm going to go ahead and play Bud. And if you have a minute, if you get called first, Sky, if you have a minute, if you can upload words for Rack, that would be awesome. You are not my slave. You are my friend.
Damn it. Just kidding.
But are you guys ready to hear him?
I'm ready.
Here we go.
Can you taste the salt stained pathway to your smile? In the folds of condemnation that it holds. When every time you bleed, another streak burnishes a line from the heart. A line from the heart. Collected from countless trips. From under the darker moon. When the stars no longer wink. And the dawn no showed its face to a moment in time. A moment in time. To reveal a meltdown in extremes, the senses and in between. When every time you blink, another streak burnishes a line from the heart. A line from the
possible to love somebody and hate somebody a little bit at the same time.
he's pretty amazing. I sometimes, you know, when we play him, I tend to forget that, you know, he's one of us. You know, it's like, you know, it starts to play, and it to me, it's just like, oh, I got the radio on. I'm sorry, you know. It always sounds so professional, and you know, I kind of forget that, you know, this could have been something that one of us wrote and put to music.
although, you know, he's kind of on a different level with that, I think. The tune was fantastic. The whole thing was great. I he kind of transports you, you know, and I'm saying a lot of cliche, but, you know, not that this was at all cliche, but, yeah. I mean, it's just beautiful. Go ahead, pretty bird.
You know, there's a reason why people love music. It's because when there's music behind words, it elevates it and kind of makes it really personal. Like we could all claim it. Anybody who has felt this can claim this and be like, oh, you know, we are kindred. And hence, I hate you a little bit because I love this. But it's broken, and it touches all those broken spots that even though we understand, you know, that pain and emotions are kind of a universal experience, when it touches us in our own personal truth, it sounds like a very a personal thing. And this just pulled me right into my own mess of crap with the whole, can you taste the salt thing halfway to your smile? How broken and stunning is that? Where, you know, yeah, that's just, that is a place that I know practically biblically. And it's unfortunate, but you smile through it anyway, and it's beautiful. And every time you blink, another streak burnishes a line from the heart. That burnishing, that rubbing it in, that staining it down your cheek. Jeez Louise, this is just, oh, I cannot, you know, it's just. And then a bending of the will provokes nocturnal spills of the once was and the never will be. Those snapshots of joy and love when everything was true and real and honest and trust was never broken and nobody ever left and it doesn't matter what happened, it's never going to be that whole again. And it is breaking me. So do I love it? Yes. Do I hate him a little bit? Kind of. But I love him more. So it's...
You still with us, Hatter?
Yeah. Yeah.
What'd you think?
I like the how the song was built, the structure. The words, when the stars no longer winked and the dawn no longer showed its face to a moment in time. That's a powerful line right there. I like the repeating to a moment in time, a moment of time, and he did it three different from the heart lines from the heart. Did it three or four times. That's a. In the comments, man, I told him I'd love to be on the creative side of songwriting. Just to hear the words being sung, you know. Good job, Bill.
Sky, what'd you think?
Oh, well, this one's already in my recommendations list, and I wrote down in the comment it's one of my favorites, but I think I'm changing that to it is my favorite. And I remember the first time I heard this thinking, you know, I love music. I'm a really big music listener, truer. I don't even know what I'm saying right now, but I listen to a lot of music. And though I do love, as you know, a lot of film scores and a lot of instrumental music, I really also enjoy lyrics. And lyrics have always been easy for me to memorize because if I love a song, it's often because their words are like poetry to me. And poetry is always words that come into song have always been easy for me to grasp and understand and to love. And great songs are written by great poets. I'm a firm believer, and yes, there's a cool, catchy phrase, but it's in those moments where you get those stanzas and those phrases and those lines that are just, you know that a poet wrote it. You just know they did. And things like, can you taste a salt-stained pathway to your smile, the folds of condemnation that it holds? You know, it is not easy to interplay poetry and song and put music to it. It's an art. It really is. It is not something that is just quick and fast-paced, and it's just like, oh, we're just going to throw this together. It is something that is done with love and care, and it's art. And I think that this is one of his best pieces that interplays poetry with music. And you can see it in the words that he brings. And the riff that he brought in that melody was absolutely brilliant. So I loved how we paired them together. And just another streak burnishes a line from a heart, from the heart, a line from the heart. I mean, burnishes a line. It's just beautiful poetry brought into lyrics. I don't know how else to say it. I really love this one. It is my favorite one of his pieces.
Yeah, it's absolutely stunning.
So,
I think that's about everything, unless you mind up.
I couldn't find, there's no poem on your page that says just words, but there is one that says words worth, and I uploaded that one, if that's.
Yeah,
oh, that is
the one.
Okay. That was a good guess then. Because I was like, there's nothing here that says words only. So it's in the studio.
Yeah.
And it's a little message for you and Pretty Bird if you want to have a nice little chuckle. So.
Yeah, okay.
I don't have a link to that for you. Okay, hold on. But it is in there.
So I was actually sitting here trying to get to the link for that so that I could add it to the top.
I have it for you already. I already got it because I had it, to get the audio.
Because you're awesome.
Oh, no.
And I used to accept them.
This is chosen words, not words worth.
Is that what I put up? Oh, I did
Should
put the right one in the studio. I did put the right one in the studio, but hold on. See, you said I'm so good, and then I messed up. I'm like, oh, no, I have it. Let's see who gets there first. It's a race.
What are we running to?
they're posting the link to the chatter because...
Pretty Bird won the race. I win.
They've got the difficult job of making me look good.
Sit back and enjoy it.
Yeah, I have no. I don't have much choice in the matter. Thank you, ladies.
I did upload the right one, though.
Awesome. Thank you. So I guess if you guys want to play.
Hit play.
Me? I'm not in the studio anymore. Do you want me to press play?
Oh, well I have to press
play. I dropped it.
She did all the work, Pretty Bird.
I dropped it and ran. I don't want to be messing with you guys in the studio. I just drop stuff and then I run out of it, right? I'm like a little squirrel that just brings you little acorns and then I skitter away.
Here we go.
Words Worth by Raconteur. I live in solitude, wrapped in darkness and silence. Mine are the rantings of an overclocked mind. Your eyes are the only thing to impart life to my words, and lend a voice to any truth within them you find. Stripping me of my armor, tearing down my walls, reminding me what it means to be alive, inspiring me to grab the world by the balls. Careening headlong into the unknown, soaring higher with every breath, until the world becomes bored with my words and I fall to certain death. I continue to bleed emotions onto the page, pondering which is the more poetic demise, exsanguination or plummeting to earth. Waiting for the inevitable, I have every tick of the clock to agonize. Like a tree that falls in the forest, if there's no one to hear what I have to say, there's no reason to worry about tomorrow. It'll be as if I never existed anyway. End poem.
I like the word.
Correct.
It was really broke up. Is it just me? Does everybody hear that okay?
I'm still here.
Wow. I got to call back. Oh, I can't call back.
So your poem, I love this poem. I love this poem, love this poem. And every time I read it or hear it, it touches me in a different way because, you know, poetry is very much perception. Perception is very much colored by whatever mood you're in. So I'm going to ignore the heartbreaking last part of that poem, and I'm going to be stuck on the stripping me of my armor, tearing down my walls. That part sounded like an attack to me. Like, okay, this is where my mind is. It's all, you know, you lend a voice to any truth within them that you find. Then it's stripping me of my armor, tearing down my walls, and I'm very much in a book. My walls keep me safe. And then you're like reminding me what it's like to, reminding me what it means to be alive, inspiring me. I'm like, oh, okay, I get you. And it's not like I never heard it before. So it's very much in a kind of Pink Floyd walls, kind of, you know, all nice and tucked away in there in the space that I created. And but then it's all good things, and that's a very difficult thing to let somebody in, or somebody just kind of wheedles their way into a tiny crack unexpectedly, and it's an uncomfortable place. And to have that be an inspiration, to have that be a thank you for pulling me out of my darkness, even if I didn't want to be there, is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful thing. And in that beautiful thing, as you go through this, pondering, you know, exsanguination, which I love, or plummeting to earth, which is, you know, anticlimactic in its lovely silent fall, it makes that thought of non-existence so profound, because it's such a gift to have been found in the first place, to have been seen, to have been found so beautiful that they wanted to bring it to life. So that juxtaposition is just amazing to me. So, Guy, yes?
So did you take tearing down my walls as a positive thing? Is that what you were explaining?
That whole stripping me of my armor, tearing down my walls, sounded very much as an attack to me. But in those next two lines, where it's reminding me what it means to be alive, inspiring me to grab the world by the balls, then he made it a good thing, a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Because
okay.
my instinct tonight anyway was very much, So Hatter, since go ahead, continue. What are your thoughts?
Well, yeah, I was looking at the same lines when you were describing it. Tearing down my walls to me was exposing to a guy that's more dangerous. But he explained it beautifully, reminding me what it means to be alive. That's like that. If you're in a in a rut in your life, to have a near-death experience can shock you back into living. I don't suggest anybody to have a near-death experience, but that's usually what jolts one back into feeling life again, I would say.
I absolutely love that. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, you're right. I was thinking along the lines of someone, you know, showing you yourself, but, you know, in a way of, you know, this is what I like about you. This is what draws me to you.
Yeah.
Exactly. Where they see what you can't, because you're stuck inside yourself that way, where you're so used to having to put up those bricks, sheltering yourself from you know, parents that say you're stupid. Not for nothing, kind of problem with it. What are your thoughts?
Oh, everything in the Hurt Locker, I'm going to have to steal something. But it reminds me of what Pretty always says. She's always just like, I puke words on a page and people like them. You know? This is what I feel like. This is what I feel like because poetry like this is just so honest and raw. And let's be honest with ourselves. Sometimes it's not all pretty and cakey and wonderful. There's a lot of stuff that goes on within us, a lot of trauma, a lot of fear, a lot of hurts, and a lot of sheltering of ourselves in fear of being hurt. And, you know, when somebody or when you write like this and you're able to express these mirrored emotions on different levels and how different people affect your life in such an honest way, it just reminds me of that saying that Pretty Bird always says, because in a lot of ways, you know, that's what people are drawn to Pretty's poems. And the Hurt Locker folder always brings me that. There has not been one poem from the Hurt Locker that I haven't said to myself, wow, this is really just tearing down all those walls that someone might put up and really writing without any regard to what others might think. And that's hard to do, you know, to write and just to write for yourself and to be able to be honest, even if it's hard to swallow. And I like that. And that's, I think that really makes good poetry and makes people drawn to that, is that truth. And sometimes it isn't always hard. I mean, it isn't always easy to swallow it. And this, you know, that and lend a voice to any truth without them you find. And I think it is true along the lines of what everybody is saying, that sometimes people see things in us that we're either not ready to see or we just can't see, because we just don't see ourselves like that for whatever reasons there might be lingering behind those shadows, you know, for the million reasons that we could not see ourselves like that. And hopefully there are people in our lives that continue to see that in us and continue to tell us till, you know, we believe even in moments that you know, at least a piece of it is true. Because, you know, you go towards the end and it becomes much darker. And sometimes people need other people in our lives to show us how they see us. So really well done.
For the last 10 minutes, I've been searching for the phrase "Hurt Locker," and I just realized that's what you brought. You brought the term "Hurt Locker," right?
Yeah, it's the list.
Okay. I read it in someone else's poem, and I'm like, that's Rex. That's Rex Holder.
It's a great term. I love it when you said that. I'm going, where was that line? I'm looking through it. I didn't see it read that one. Hurt Locker.
No, it's the Hurt Locker poems. They always rip my heart out. But
yeah.
I love them. But they always
So that Hurt Locker.
Yeah, it's just a folder, a category that put the poems that kind of tear me up.
Yeah.
Or tore me up.
I think it's interesting how the whole first part of the night was all we people don't believe or don't want to see, you know, the bad parts of themselves. They don't want to see that kind of reflection, and we kind of ended up with, you know, it's equally as hard to see the good in yourself sometimes. I kind of love how that's, you know, two sides of the same coin.
You know, I've been saying for the last several nights I've been on the air that how good the poetry has become that we read every night. And that's a compliment to everybody that in this group and that shares the radio. It is, I just want to say how phenomenal I think you guys are. I mean, poetry is a puzzle of words, right? You've got a choice of what words you put together. And I think when it clicks, when you write something very good and you're happy with it, and everybody will tell you that, it is you've created the right way of description. That's not how to say it. It is the puzzle of words. It's how you put them together that makes the young girls cry. The one makes the Hurt Locker, right? Five different poets could write the same feeling, but only one of them will touch you. So I think everybody's getting that. Everybody learns how to do that just by reading other people's stuff and writing as much as we do. It's just phenomenal. You guys are great.
I think
that
there's something to be said for finding the freedom or the confidence to put a little bit of truth on the page, where people stop at a certain point in their writing, they stop describing what they think pain should look like or try to make this pretty, or they stop trying to describe it and just let go and feel a little bit. And that vein of honesty is what touches people. It just sometimes takes a while to get there.
Yeah. Sometimes simpler is better. Less is more. Sometimes if I remember that drawing, when in painting or a drawing, less is more, man. Quit messing with it. You know, fuck it up.
Except when you miss all my big words, Hatter.
I love it. I love you for that.
You knew that was coming.
I go. Is that one she made up? Is that one she made up? Or is that a real word?
No. Pretty Bird's the only one that makes up words.
I think that's one of the greatest guys. When Pretty Bird, I think it was Pretty Bird, read as if she was a recording, because she was so nervous.
Yes.
Yeah.
They think that.
That was my choice. He introduced me, and I had to.
Yeah, I thought I was told that. I go, you're kidding? I was there. I didn't realize that.
Under the bus.
I thought greatest of the year. That's great.
Yeah.
No, and then to learn sky makes up her own words. So the second one is when sky. Man, I'm losing everybody. Okay, that's a little better. I couldn't hear anybody for a second. Yeah.
Were you saying Pretty Bird?
You were saying Hatter?
Yeah.
No,
well,
Hatter wasn't done.
It was hearing that Sky made up her own words. I thought I was the only one that did that. I've done it before.
If Ron Dawson can do it, I can do it.
I think we...
It was a great word, too.
It's
a great
word to making up words. And, you know, especially when they are so easily understandable that people question whether or not they're real because it sounds like it should be a real word. So I kind of love when it went well done that way.
Yeah.
But I
like they know what you mean. They know what you mean. Yeah.
Exactly. I appreciate not necessarily old-timey, that lost elegance in the English language that we lost so many years ago, where everything had a word. There was a word for everything, and now everything's lumped up in lazy adjectives. And so when you write with a precision of language that can't be denied and a grace of a pen, it's brilliant. And I think, Sky, you do that better than most. And I may have precision of language. I may use some big words, but I have no grace. I don't pretend to have grace. There's nothing graceful in how I don't care. I have no designs on taking that. But you are always, always so eloquent, and it's just lovely to read.
I think everybody has their own style. And, you know, there's times that I obsess over a poem, you know, and so it is one of those things where, like I obsess about bringing a poem. I'm like, that one's shit. Okay, no, I can't bring that one. I, like, really get really obsessed about what poem I'm going to bring because I'm like, that isn't that great. So I think there is a difference of how people see themselves, the way they write, and how other people see themselves, how they write, and I think that everybody's so vastly different. Like you say, you're not graceful, but I do think that you're graceful. I think you're graceful in a very raw way. But when you read, you bring that cadence that makes it so graceful, yet it's so piercing because of the language and the way that you set up the words and because of the honesty behind it and because it's just like spoken word. And so I really like that that medley that you bring, and it's different. I think so many people have signatures, the way they write, and it's all good. Like, it's all really good. Like, if we all wrote the same, how boring would that be? We're just been listening to the same poem over and over. I respect what you said, Hatter. But I would have to kindly disagree when you can have five poems and only one touches you. I think you can definitely have five poems and each one touches you in a different way because they're different. If they're on the same topic, I think because of the way that the different avenues, I guess one of my favorite things is my picture prompt contest, put out one picture and see all the different ways people take that and how creative they can be and what they see. Do they see the trees? Do they see the river? Do they see the house? Do they see the forest? Do they see something totally not even in the picture that they're just leaping on metaphor? Like, I love that beauty and boundlessness in writing. That is my favorite thing about reading. I don't know.
I didn't mean to suggest that all five poets could do that. It was more of a style, it's like who's your favorite poet? People will tell you different names because that's the one that tickles that feather in their ear. I like to hear the poems recited rather than me reading them.
That's funny. I'm like the opposite. I hate when people read me because everybody reads me wrong. Because
Is that what he meant, or is he meant him? I don't know now. I don't know which one he meant.
Hatter?
Hatter? I'm sorry. What? Yeah.
Did you mean having somebody read your poems or just hearing other people read their own?
I would in both.
I like hearing people read their own work.
Yeah.
But I have a hard time hearing people read me. It's the reason why I started SoundCloud, because I don't write with a lot of line break end stop. But everybody wants to put them there, so it's choppy. And when it's choppy, it doesn't have that attachment of emotion. So because I write like I've got special needs, I tend to, read them on my own.
Yeah.
Because I'm all over the place. I have no normal sense of things.
Ladybird, it's like you have no breath. It's like you talk about, I write really long lines, but that is, it's like by the end of it, by the end of that line, it's like you've given everything. I know that I'm going to sound like a stalker right now, but it's like after every single line, It's like you've given everything you have to give in that one line, and it literally leaves you empty of breath. And that is one, like, if I were to say, you know, I always say, oh, it's a cadence, it's that. That is what it is. It's because you say so much in one line, and it's like by the end of the line, you've got to take a deep breath because you've just exhausted all the emotion inside yourself. And I really like that when listening to you read, or and I think it's true, when you start putting breaks in there, it's not as effective because they don't sound natural. And that's why I want you to read yourself and not me reading it.
Pretty bird. Yeah, exactly. Sure. Exactly what Sky just said. You have a way, besides the right being solid, your verses are spot on in structure, but it is how you read. You have this thing where the first line of any stanza will start out as the two descriptive words that builds up to the end of the second line. Then the third line you describe, you settle it to a to the same level, but then the fourth line is like, this is where you intensely bring it home. And then the last line is usually calm it back down, like she says, and then you take a breath. I said that very poorly, but you do that in every stanza. I can hear it. I can hear it when you read it. And it's
That's
like,
awesome.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
I promise you, I am not that coordinated.
Even if it's unconscious, it is the way you write it, because the words are there where everything is. Some verses more than others. I'll agree to that. But there's the way you read it's the certain cadence that just blows my mind, and it is every stanza you have to take a breath. Forget to breathe. So agree with Sky.
Yeah, it's not that I forget to breathe. It's that I'm very long-winded. I don't know when to shut up. If you ever listen to the talk that's a regular conversation, it's about every 15 minutes of breathe. Ask Rack. I'll just go. It's crazy.
Well, I'm still waiting
on
my audio book from Rack.
Appreciate you guys.
He has a wonderful audio book voice. I just want him to read all my audio books. So,
hey, did you read all your grandma's books?
There are certain people that I like that I could totally see reading audiobooks here.
Yeah. I would love to listen to you.
I could what?
What? She said she could see me reading.
Guy.
Yes?
Did you ever go through your grandma's books that you sort of inherited? You said you had boxes of books.
Yeah, I wrote a really long poem, but no one likes to read long poetry on home poetry, so it has, like, no read. It's fine.
In chunk.
It's fine.
No, that's
I'll
like, that's like, I remember these guys on AP years ago. They go, yeah, I just wrote 20,000 words. Just wrote one, you know, 15,000 words. Who's going to read it? Nobody's going to read that.
Well, something
what
to
do
with
that story.
Like
if I really like the person's writing, I'll stop.
Sky will read it. I've got a
really
long things that nobody wants to read.
Yeah. It would be like a run-on silicone, you know.
You'd
talk to yourself.
Hmm?
Run-on soliloquy.
Yeah. And what did you say, pretty? I heard hatter.
Okay.
I didn't hear pretty.
Oh, I said I absolutely appreciate you because you know, you'll read those 5,000 words and stuff that nobody else touches.
Oh, yeah. Well,
oh,
I love
yeah.
reading, and I love reading books and short stories. So if I know I like – I don't do that to just everybody. I don't just look – I don't go through AP and say, oh, look at Long Worm. I'm going to read it. If I really like the writer, I will take the time to read it.
Oh, sure.
Like Stephen – Stephen sent me a whole book that he's working on, and he sent it to me, and I helped, you know, and he was like, I really want to know your opinion on edits. I know you read a lot of books. So I actually went through section of, like, this huge PDF email that he sent me, and go, I haven't finished it yet, but to go through and say, oh, I like this part, you know, why not try this? So, and that's because I like Stephen, so, and I like the sci-fi. I like sci-fi that he does. He watches a lot of sci-fi, and it's reflective in his work. So I took the time to do that because I enjoy it. You know, I wouldn't just do it just randomly. So I'm not that nice, but I do like to read people that I like to read. So
it's funny. I mean, I got asked to give my opinion. Well, you're kind and sweet and fabulous. I'm just saying. And I got asked for the edit. It was 28 pages that was sent to me by somebody on AP that I talked to. And I pointed out a continuity problem that was pretty gosh darn big because somewhere around page 15, I was like, what the fuck? Oh, I'm sorry. It's PG 13. And my bad. I'll have to beat that out or something. And I was like, well, I just have a little question. What about this? And then I got told off, and then he got all butthurt, and then I'm never going to let you read anything again. Yet. Then don't. So sorry. Enjoy your story. Goodbye. And so now I'm very, very tentative about wanting to help anybody that I don't know, like really, 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 really well. Like, if we're just kind of friends, no, I don't think so, but thanks. And then they get butthurt about that, too, so I just can't wait. But,
because I'm so terrible at grammar, and then I'll spell the word the right way in like one sentence, and then I'll spell it the wrong way in another sentence, and I don't catch it. And like, if your apps does a really good job like monitoring me, he'll read and he'll be like, oh, you know, and he'll put little things in little quotes so that he's like, I really liked this part. And anytime he quotes something, I know to look at it because something's wrong. I love it because I would hate to have 50 people read the same poem and there's like a typo or there's wrong grammar. Like, that's why I used to like X-nay all the grammar. I'm like, no periods, no commas, because I don't want to do it wrong. But now I'm really into the commas and the periods, but I still am not that great with grammar. So I personally love when people, you know, use constructive criticism towards me, especially even when people say, oh, this, you know, if you, maybe you can try this way. Sometimes I'll say, oh, yeah, I do like that. And sometimes I'll say, yeah, I can see why you would want it that way, but I kind of like it the way I'm going to keep it the way I have it because it's more the way that I speak. But then sometimes I do change. I say, oh, yeah, this might, if I took out this, someone's helped me. Lori LG helps me all the time with my iambic pentameter because I'm obsessive over it, and I'm not perfect at it. And she always says, okay, well, if you want it to take the iambic pentameter, you're going to have to change it to this. Huh?
What? Well, iambic pentameter was what was the way people spoke back in Old English. It's current language the way we speak now. It is an unnatural way to speak.
But
it's like Shakespearean sonnets are the bane of my existence.
But when you do certain forms, which I do like to do, and you do have to do it. So I do like it. And sometimes I just do forms and I just say, yes, this is this form, but the iambic pentameter is not here. But sometimes I do want it there and I do like it there. And she always helps me. So I always like constructive feedback. So if you read any of my poetry, pretty, I never take it to heart. I always find it helpful. And even if I don't take the information, even if I don't take the suggestion all the time, I still do appreciate it. And I often do take the suggestion. And I especially love when people fix my grammar and my spelling because they're atrocious. And I don't want to look a fool.
When I did those big group contests, one of my rules to the judges was to not mark down for grammar unless it took away from the right. Mainly because how many of poets, there's linguists as their second, third language.
It's more about the feel of the piece, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I said I don't want to take it away because they forgot a comma or something, or didn't, you know, not up on fluent with punctuation of the American language. I didn't want to, you know, to.
Well, when it's commas,
and you wouldn't believe. No, my point was, you wouldn't believe the. You wouldn't believe the get. You wouldn't believe the crap I got for that.
People are very particular.
I mean, yeah, it's. I mean.
And they're all different.
Yeah, I'm trying if you're right,
I think that was the point where I should give myself because we're over time.
I jacked Rack, though.
No, no, no. I don't mind. I could sit here all night. I just don't know that Deb would appreciate it. So I'm going to try and thank everybody, starting with Deb, because I think she might have even been the first one to drop a poem for me tonight. Was she first? Anyway, thanks to Deb and to Sweet Pea and to Hatter and to Bud and to Sky for more than just for reading and you know, helping out in the background, and Pretty Bird for helping me too, because I couldn't have did this without you. Allie, I think that was the only one we had that needed a reader. So is that Allie, Bud, CP, you?
Kay.
I think it's Kay. Oh, Kay, yes. That was my other SoundCloud. That's great. Thank you. And Kay. You know, I really appreciate when everyone, any time that someone takes the time to drop something, whether it's a pre-write or a fresh write, doesn't matter, as long as it's, you know, kind of on topic and sparks the conversation, which everybody did. So I appreciate you all for helping out, and you know, don't worry about getting a written comment, because I will go back and comment on it. It may take me a while, but everyone that wrote for me will get see a written comment at some point in time. And thank you everybody for writing and for spending time and for sparking conversation. It's been fun. And I really appreciate you all.
All right.
Thank you, Ralph. Thank you. And don't forget to look in the staff room, Rack and Tor.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye, guys.
Good night.
Good night,
Heather. Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye.
Oh, it's not clicking to end episode. I'm sitting here clicking it 15 times. It just ain't clicking nothing. Oh, yeah, no, it's good.
Say it once.
I'm going to be here all night. Oh, it's this is bad. If anybody wants to go in there and shut it off for me, because it ain't clicking. Oh, it's clicking.